Good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals. We have two cases set on our 9 o'clock docket and one on our 10 o'clock docket. Are counsel ready to proceed in Stewart Software?
Yes, Your Honors.
Have you received our written statement of procedures and do you have any questions? All right, we have the somewhat unusual circumstance of an appeal and a cross appeal. My suggestion would be to proceed with Mr. Kopcho's argument, reserving whatever time you wish. Then the appellee and cross appellant use all your time and the final word is up to you. Is that acceptable? All right, proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Lori Sturman, Colorado bar number 39393. With me is Mr. Greg Bell. He's bar number 9630. And also with us is the appellant, Mr. Richard Kopcho. Your Honors, this is not a case about theft. This is simply a case about a contractual relationship between two business entities. However, due to numerous errors by the trial court, the jury ultimately rendered an untenable legal verdict for civil theft against Mr. Kopcho, the owner of the defendant Holonics, Inc. The appeal here is based on three key legal issues that we feel were errors by the trial court. First, the trial court erred in refusing to instruct the jury regarding applicable provisions of the federal copyright law. This was based on a pretrial ruling that federal copyright law did not apply in this case. Second, the trial court erred in refusing to instruct the jury regarding Mr. Kopcho's affirmative defenses to the federal to the civil theft claim. And finally, the trial court erred in instructing the jury regarding the civil theft claim in a joint instruction as to Mr. Kopcho and Holonics, Inc. Unless the court requests otherwise, I will not summarize the facts of this case except as they pertain to the legal issues here. Your Honors, from the outset of this case, ownership of the computer software program known as PassIT was in dispute. As software is a copyrightable product under federal copyright law was absolutely applicable here.
Sturman, can I ask you to be very specific on the evidence that the other side put on regarding the copyright issues? I recognize that their complaint has a very broad statement of the property at issue. There's intellectual property rights, which would be copyrights, trade secrets, you know, arguably patents, arguably trademarks. What precise evidence was there about the copyright issues?
Specifically, they claimed that they had ownership under the agreement. Throughout trial, there was testimony regarding the registration of the copyright by Rough Dog Software, Inc. So that issue came out in that way, and looking at it as far as theft by registration in some sense. So that was the extent that federal copyright law came out, except that there was also an expert on behalf of the defendants that testified regarding the standards of in the industry as far as registration of copyrightable material like a software program.
I did read a lot of the record here, but I'm curious, was there any test? I didn't see anybody specifically talking about object code, source code, anything like that. Am I right, or was there testimony about that?
There was. Both experts did testify regarding the source code, and actually that was a key part of the plaintiff's breach of contract, well, all of their claims as to what work was actually done on the source code. The source code was actually one of the exhibits, I believe.
Thank you.
Okay. Your Honor, we feel that this, the initial ruling, the pretrial ruling by the trial court that federal copyright law did not apply was a ruling of law that should be reviewed de novo by this court. The federal copyright law speaks to various aspects of owning a property, such as computer software. It provides that ownership of such product vests originally in the author of that product. So the party that does the creative work of putting it into a tangible medium is the party that has ownership of the copyright. The copyright protection continues while the work is progressing. The federal copyright statute, which is found at in Title 17 of the United States Code, Section 101, ETSEC, also provides that registration of a copyright is permissive, and provides a copyright statute of frauds, which states that a transfer of the copyright must be in writing. The evidence presented at trial showed that the company Rough Dogs LLC, which was the predecessor in interest of Holonics Inc., was the author of the software. They did the creative work of creating the source code and so forth. There was no evidence of a written transfer to Stewart Software Company. There was no evidence that Stewart Software Company did the creative work in putting this idea into a tangible medium.
Isn't there an exception, though, for work that's done for hire or under contract?
There is, Your Honor. There's various factors that need to be looked at for that, and it comes down to agency principles, such as it has to be an employee doing the work for an employer, and it comes down to the question of what control was there of the employer over the work being done.
And not an independent contractor does not fit into that category?
It could, but there was no determination by the trial court as to any of those factors to conclude that that applied here.
But even if it was an independent contractor for work for hire, that needs to be in writing, correct?
There would have to be an agreement to that effect as to ownership. Otherwise, the kind of the default rule is that the author has the ownership of the product. Your Honor, ownership is an essential element of the civil theft claim, as seen in the case of Eitan versus Unger in the Supreme Court. They must prove that the plaintiff was the owner of the software. In this case, the jury was given no legal instruction as to how to determine ownership. They were left with simply an elemental instruction on civil theft that in many senses could have just concluded that the plaintiff owned it without going further and instructing as to the disputed issues, and particularly as to federal copyright law.
If we were to reverse and remand on that, why would you be entitled to a new trial on damages as opposed to just liability?
Well, I have some issues with the damages instructions that were given. We have no idea what the jury determined, or did they award damages for the value of the software? Was it related to the amounts paid? I think those were issues that, without the copyright instructions, could not have been fully determined by the jury.
Can I ask you, on that? I don't want you to run out of time here, Ms. Sturman, and I'm also concerned about some of the damages issues here. Did you put on, and I guess I'll give you a heads up where I'm heading with this, let's say hypothetically we were to decide, picking up on what Judge Webb asked you, if we were to reverse on civil theft and say you get a new trial. I'm not quite sure what I do about the other two claims. I suppose you can, on one hand, you could say the jury, based on your damages argument, the jury decided it. The damages was 168, and based on the instructions, put it on civil theft and not the other two. But they really thought it was 168 for all three. You could take that position. On the other hand, you could take the position that the jury looked at the instructions and awarded nominal damages on breach of contract and breach of fiduciary duty, that they, they made the decision. And I suppose you could say we're not sure. What evidence, and I would like you to be specific if you can, what evidence was there to establish unique damages regarding breach of contract or breach of fiduciary duty? In other words, I suppose hypothetically you could say, you don't get damages on breach of contract specifically because of some provision in the contract. That evidence could have been on, which may have supported the jury saying nominal damages there, as opposed to on the other two claims. So what was there any evidence to distinguish between the claims on the damages awards? And was my question clear? If it's not, please ask.
I believe so. There was no specific evidence put on as to the value of the software. Essentially, the plaintiff's position was that the software at the point of trial was virtually valueless. So in distinguishing the amount of damages, I believe the evidence put on was simply what amounts the plaintiff had paid over the course of the relationship between the parties. There was no specification as to which claims that related to.
Okay, and there was no evidence of any defenses that might apply only to the contract or the breach of fiduciary claim with respect to damages?
There was evidence as to the defenses as far as how much work was done. There was extensive testimony regarding, the hours put in, the numerous subcontractors, I guess you could say, that put in time and billing records, et cetera, that were put forth to show that this was work done, and it wasn't all related to the software. A good portion of that was for time spent by the defendant and the employees of defendant.
Right. So it was the plaintiff's position that the damages were the same for all three in terms of the evidence, and did they argue same damages, same way to measure them?
If you look at closing argument of plaintiff's counsel, yes. Specifically asked that the jury prioritize the damages and first put those on civil theft, second put them on fiduciary duty, and third put them on breach of contract. So there was no specification as to the individual claims.
And I'll stop badgering you in a second here. If we were to, again, hypothetically, if we were to reverse on civil theft and say you get a new trial, what should we do anything with the damages awarded on the other two claims? And if so, why?
Yeah, I don't think that we would truly dispute those issues. I think, the breach of contract was definitely a issue that we felt should have gone to the jury as an issue of fact, so we wouldn't challenge the damages on those two.
In your view, the damages awards of $1 for both of those remain? I guess you would obviously want to take that position.
Yeah, we did have an affirmative counterclaim for breach of contract that we were actually barred from presenting due to the trial management order. There was a counterclaim, but we at this point, the civil theft is what we're primarily concerned with. If I could, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Villanueva. With me at council table is my associate, Nicole Schramm. Members of the court, every argument that the defendant has made in this case is essentially predicated upon asking this court to accept their version of the facts as opposed to the version of the facts that the plaintiff presented at the time of trial. The facts in this case, and the facts sure get in the way of the defendant's arguments here. The facts of this case are egregious and singular. And in terms of the theft claim, I mean, let's look at what Mr. Cacho did, and with all due respect to opposing counsel, they blatantly misstated the record with respect to what happened to the software. Rough Dog Software, Inc. is not a subsidiary of Holonix, Inc. Rough Dog Software, Inc. is wholly owned by Richard Cacho. Holonix, Inc., as of July 2007, was in the tank. It was going out of business. Mr. Cacho had built up this empire that collapsed as quickly as it was built up. The company was on the ropes, and so he took the software that was being developed by Holonix Inc. as an independent contractor for my client. He took the software and he registered it in the name of Rough Dog Software Inc., which was not the author, which had absolutely no relationship to my client. It was an entity my client had never heard of. And he did that on the same day that he locked my client out of the software, gave my client no access to the source code, and basically took everything that my client had paid $328,000 for and kept it.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Villanueva. That would include the copyright rights, though, right? Object code and source code.
What they copyrighted was the source code.
Sure.
They did not copyright the website. Now, they also stole the website. I mean, that was part and parcel of the whole mix.
And I do understand. I want to take your time. I just want to confirm. I do understand that. But one of the things out of many you claim they stole was the copyright rights.
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
Thank you.
The source code was part of that which we can contend was stolen.
Thank you.
Okay. The evidence before the court with respect to the theft claim begins with the non-disclosure agreement. Mr. Kopcho had never heard of this concept of the banking software to manage loan portfolios. The non-disclosure agreement said that the intellectual property that my client disclosed to Mr. Kopcho would remain confidential, and that Holonix, whichever entity it was, and there were three Holonix entities that were basically interchangeable, although Mr. Kopcho never disclosed which entity it was at any particular time. But the NDA signed by a Holonix entity said that all intellectual property rights derived from the concept would remain with Stewart Software Company.
But can you help me with that? Because I didn't read the NDA that way. I don't know if you have it there, but I think it just says nothing in this NDA is transferring copyright rights or intellectual property rights except for as confidential information needed for marketing. So I think I'm a little concerned that you may be overstating the provision, but respond.
I think the NDA says that Stewart Software is not giving any intellectual property rights to Holonix. I think that's a fair reading, Judge. But then in the negotiations between Mr. Kopcho and Mr. Walter, and again, this is conflicting evidence, which the jury apparently resolved in favor of my client, there was evidence that Mr. Kopcho had agreed that Mr. Walter's company would own, quote, own as you pay. There were two emails where Mr. Kopcho said that. There was the testimony of Mr. Walter wherein he said Mr. Kopcho agreed that I would own the software. Now, under the case of Computer Associates, which I know defense counsel would like to discredit simply by saying it's United States District Court, not Colorado law, under Computer Associates, it doesn't matter whether you're an employee or an independent contractor. If you are developing software for somebody else, or if you're developing intellectual property for somebody else, it belongs to that person. But here in this case, we had an agreement. We had an agreement. There was never any understanding, there was never any discussion whatsoever that Mr. Kopcho would have the right to copyright any of this material. And the timing of the filing of the copyright application is startling because it's the same day that they locked Stewart Software Company out of everything that they had paid for. So my client paid $328,000 and got some logos and a few brochures. I mean, that's basically all my client got for $328,000. My client was paying this money, and as our expert, Mr. Webster, testified at trial, they basically quit. They quit working on my client's software. They blew the deadline. They blew the budget by over 50%, and they kept saying, give us more money, and we can't give you a deadline. And so my client ends up with basically nothing. This case is on all fours with the Rhino Funds case, because in the Rhino Funds, it's not like Mikado, where there's a written contract that covers the same issues. This is like Rhino Funds, where although there was a written contract, the person controlling the entity personally caused assets to be diverted. I think it was $200,000 worth of the $600,000. It wasn't the entirety of what had been paid for, but this case is on all fours with Rhino Funds, because the individual controlling the company redirected the property not to to the proper entity, assuming that Holonix was the proper entity, which is what they're saying. They're saying it belonged to Holonix. Well, how can they justify it ending up in the name of Rough Dog Software, Inc.?
Can I ask you, Mr. Villanueva, what I understand what you're saying, Why isn't it a question for the jury, though, to be instructed on economic loss rule and to make the determination as to whether or not the duty was or was not the same under the contract? The court, by not giving the economic loss defense instruction, essentially said there was, it made that decision as a matter of law, and it seems to me there wasn't a lot of evidence talking about what exactly the duty was.
Well, I think that the question of duty is a question of law for the court to decide. But let's talk about the issue of jury instructions for a second here, because I know the defendant keeps making an issue out of jury instructions. You need to look at the jury instructions that they tendered. They tendered an instruction that essentially said you should find plaintiff's claim was barred by the economic loss rule. They did not tender an instruction that explained the economic loss rule, assuming that that's even an issue that is supposed to go to the jury. And it appears to be undecided in this state at this time as to whether it is an issue of law for the court to decide. I mean, certainly beginning with Lannan versus Taco Bell, you know, duty is an issue of law for the court to decide. But the instruction that they gave was meaningless. It's similar to the instructions on their affirmative defenses. So we have an affirmative defense, failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. So they want to, they give the jury and they tender instruction, you shall find for the defendant if you find the plaintiff has failed to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. They did not tender instructions to the trial court that were meaningful, accurately stated the law, or were supported by the evidence. And the issue with respect to the affirmative defenses, which Ms. Sturman brought up, I would submit to this court that the trial court correctly declined to give instructions on affirmative defenses that were not supported by the evidence. And they have not cited in their brief how their affirmative defenses were supported by the evidence. All they said is we put affirmative defenses in our answer. The trial court had a duty to instruct the jury on that. The appellant has a duty to tell this court why it is that those affirmative defenses were supported by evidence in the record and therefore could be justified giving to the jury.
But with respect to the economic loss, what's the basis for Joe companies, client, other than?
Well, There is no written contract between Mr. Kopcho individually and my client. And I would submit that the duty is the same duty that existed in the Rhino Funds case, which is that the owner or person that controls a company has a duty not to steal property from a third person. There was no contract between Mr. Kopcho and Steward Software Company. There was no contract saying you don't steal, but I would submit that in our economic world that we all as individuals have duties not to steal from people, and there was no contract covering this. To the extent that there was a contract, there was a verbal agreement between Mr. Walter and Mr. Kopcho that Steward Software Company would own the software for which it paid, and which Mr. Webster and there doesn't seem to be a dispute in the record that we paid for that which had been developed.
But if there was such a contract, and that created a duty on Mr. Kopcho to give the software back, doesn't that at least create an issue of whether the economic loss rule would apply?
Well, again, I would say that under that rationale, then Rhino Funds would have been improperly decided. Here's Mr. Kopcho, who's basically a stranger necessarily a stranger, but he's not a party individually to a contract. Yet he interferes in that contract because of his power as the owner of Helonix Inc. He steps in and takes an asset that doesn't belong to Helonix either, that doesn't belong to him, certainly didn't belong to him, yet he caused it to be put into basically his name, into an entity that he solely owned and solely controlled, and that was separate and independent from Helonix Inc. and not burdened by Helonix's debts and other claims against it. I would suggest that Mr. Kopcho did have a duty to not steal. We all have a duty to not steal. And he was not individually a party to this contract, but nonetheless, he stepped in, and when he saw the tide turning, he took this property from Mr. Walter Stewart Software, paid $328,000, and he figured it was worth something, so I'm going to take it away from Mr. Walter, I'm going to take it away from the floundering ship Helonix, and I'm going to put it in the name of some other entity, because maybe I can do something with it.
Waiver, if I can interrupt you in the limited time you have, I really would like you to focus on the damages issue, the instruction, the verdict forms, all the stuff you said about the election.
Okay, absolutely.
And let me present you my question very specifically. And really, there are two of them. How do we know that the jury did not intend to award nominal damages when it did on breach of contract and breach of fiduciary duty? And could you tell me exactly what your argument is? Is it an instruction complaint that you're objected to? Or is it a verdict complaint? And if so, how did you preserve the issue?
Okay. I preserved the issue by objecting to the instruction on multiple recovery that was given by Judge Lammons. And I pleaded with Judge Lammons that this instruction would require the jury to basically spread damages over different claims. And he basically said to me, that's too bad. That's the price you pay when you choose to file multiple claims. I'm going to tell the jury that, you know, I'm going to give this instruction exactly as is, and then we'll just, tally up everything. And so we had discussions in chambers, and I said, I'm just going to ask the jury to give me a dollar on everything else, and I'm going to ask for all the damages on the theft claim. And so when you say, how do we know what the jury intended? And not to be immodest, but the jury did exactly what I requested them to do. Exactly. They didn't give me quite as much money as I requested, but they filled out the verdict form exactly as I requested. Although it's very interesting that the one claim that they found in favor of the defendants on was the breach of fiduciary duty against Helonix Inc. So the jury was thinking. They clearly were thinking, but they did exactly what we wanted because, I mean, let's face it, you have the potential for treble damages and attorney's fees, which, I don't know, I've got about 33 seconds left, but I would submit that the language of the statute does require mandates and an award of attorney's fees. The jury did what we requested them to do because we really had no choice other than to make the request that way in order to maximize the recovery that we could get. And I see I have about 7 seconds left. If the court has any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I see my time is done. Okay. Thank you.
Your Honors, I'd like to touch briefly on the civil theft issue and the transfer, the alleged transfer from Mr. Kopcho individually to Rough Dog Software, Inc. Mr. Villanueva's position basically misses the point because the issue here is that ownership was at issue. That was never determined prior to the instructions being given. There was no pretrial ruling, and federal copyright law was not given as to that. Instructions were not given as to the element of ownership in the civil theft statute. They're basically admitting that Stewart Software Company was not the owner of the software, and how a transfer from Helonix Inc. to Rough Dog Software Inc. creates a civil theft claim for Stewart Software Company just doesn't follow through. As far as the NDA, I think the court has reviewed that, and there was no determination by the trial court as to the meaning of the NDA and how that applied going forward. Regarding the economic loss rule and the instructions that were given on affirmative defenses, the trial court simply did not make any specific findings as to the various affirmative defenses. It simply rejected those instructions outright without any particular findings.
Why is, two-part question, why is the economic loss rule a jury issue in the first place? And if it is, why was your instruction, which is pretty skeletal, to say the least, adequate to preserve that error?
It is the jury's determination to see what the duties were under the contract, and then looking at the elements of civil theft, was the action of stealing some property, is that the same concept? Is that the same duty? So I think it is a factual question for the jury to...
Let's assume then, I agree with you 100%. How is it that the instruction you tendered properly presents that issue to the jury?
It stated that there has to be some something outside of an implied or express contractual duty that's being alleged for the civil theft claim. So while it was not full on the economic loss rule, it did explain the essential elements. And the trial court gave no opportunity to expand if it felt that it did not fully state the law. And the court did not make a finding as to that instruction specifically.
I take it from your last statements that you agree that there wasn't a contract between the plaintiff and Holonix?
I believe there was a contract between the parties.
It was an oral agreement, but a contract nonetheless.
There was a written agreement, just not fully executed. I don't think the issue of a breach of contract claim between Steward Software and Holonix Inc. can be questioned. That claim was presented to the jury.
You sued each other for breach of the same contract, right?
Pardon?
You both sued each other for breach of contract.
Exactly. And as far as any contract between, Mr. Kopcho and Steward Software or its owner, that, again, they're talking about the transfer of the software, and they're asking, there was a verdict for breach of contract against Mr. Kopcho. And I just wanted to touch briefly on the breach of the damages issue. For the civil theft, they would have to show the value of the property, and that simply was not in the record. Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. Counsel can set up as soon as the tables are cleared.